If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You know my guest already. He's the one and only Ben Fennell. You can find him on Twitter at Ben_Fennell_NFL. Ben, congratulations on another amazing draft run, your 10th one now in the books. I know you're already planning your golf trips worldwide, but first of all, how was your draft and how have you been?
It was great. Detroit was a great weekend, great week out there, awesome crowd, energy, Midwest weather spared us just enough to get off those 3 days. And getting to this point in my calendar is just such a great feeling. You know, 20 weeks on the road at Thursday night CBS, right into Senior Bowl Combine draft. To hit this Tuesday as we sit here, April 30th, it's just a really good feeling. And to have this draft in the rear view and to do some post-draft analysis is a really good feeling. And then you can kind of move forward with our springs and summer, and 2024 will be here before you know it.
Yeah, it's going to be the draft in Green Bay, which is going to be interesting in and of itself. We'll see how Green Bay handles that, but that's exciting. I just want to, well, first of all, like I said, congratulations and awesome to see you get the shout out on live TV. I know CD mentioned you a couple times. You got the camera pointed at you a couple times, which is really, really cool. But
yeah, the shout outs have become, you know, they're kind of the norm, you know, combine draft. I'm not on camera too often. I still don't know how I feel about that. A little bit of, you know, pulling the curtain behind the scenes there, but I don't know if I was camera ready. It was a long day. It was a little humid there on Saturday as well, but it's certainly nice to be appreciated. There are few more appreciative people in this industry than Charles Davis. He is an incredible human being, incredibly polite, incredibly appreciative, great on the air, and it's a pleasure to call him my friend as well. He's just a model citizen. He gave a speech to the crew before the day, what he said to Rich for his charity efforts, what he says to all the people behind the scenes. He is just as appreciative a talent on-camera person as I have ever seen, and I love working with him.
That's awesome to hear. You never, obviously, you know, we get to see people on camera and see how they interact with, you know, on camera, but you never know behind the scenes. And he always seemed like that sort of dude, but just to kind of get that pull behind the curtain is awesome to see as well. And kind of speaking of that, just kind of before we jump into, obviously everyone wants to know about the Packers draft and things like that, but what is NFL draft look like for you kind of behind the scenes? And what are you kind of helping out with? And what are you sort of doing to get Daniel and CD and those guys all set for draft day?
Well, a lot of it's preparation in the lead up, preparing for following that bouncing ball on draft night. So it's doing all those breakdown tapes and in collaboration with DJ and what he wants to see as far as player traits. So a lot of that stuff is kind of built once you get there. And then you just need to hit the buttons when things happen. But during the course of the draft, I'm actually helping CD and DJ with some research. And DJ has a laptop on a screen there that I'm actually mirroring. And anything he needs, any information, any notes, I just pull it right up. And we've come so far since having Mayock on the desk with a giant binder. And someone gets drafted in the fourth round, he's flipping that binder like it's a giant, you know, encyclopedia. It's just not always great TV. So it's like, you know what? Anything you can do for them and keep them hands off their notes, their laptops, their binders, let's go with that. So this has kind of evolved throughout the years. And the draft is an animal. And yep, considering all these trades and the movements, and these guys are trying to keep up with the draft by hand on the desk. So it's a lot of kind of updating them on what happened, what has happened yesterday, their current roster, things like that, who's left on their big board, who's left at certain positions, any quick snap thought or information, we try to be there for them. And as you know, the 3 days, we're on TV a lot. Random thoughts come up all the time. There's a lot of need for us. Jack Andre is kind of the lead researcher from NFL. He handles a lot of the needs that Rich Eisen has, being the host of that whole group. And it's definitely a machine behind the scenes. And following that bouncing ball on draft day, it's an animal. And Rich gave up his cards a little earlier than normal this year because of all those trades. It was really hard to keep up.
Yeah, it was incredible, especially on, you know, what was it, like round four, round five, there were just trades all over the place. Philly moved like 1,000 times, I think it was. It was just unbelievable. And just to see you guys pull all of that off, I can't even imagine the time, effort, and energy that goes into all of that. So again, kudos to you and the entire team. Obviously I'm doing the live stream during the draft, but then I go back and I kind of watch it afterwards, and just the transitions between everything and how you guys are able to analyze everything. It's such a well-oiled machine. I don't necessarily miss the huge encyclopedia binders, but I do miss the Mayock getting upset with like orangutans calling the picks or whatever it might be. Those were some of the all-time draft moments. So I do miss a little bit of that, but you guys are incredible. And
Mayock's whole role is that like curmudgeon football guy on the crew is a great balance. You know, he always wants to just get back to talk about the players, evaluate it. It's their day, enough of the zoo picks and things like that. But this broadcast has evolved, and day three, you need a little of that. You need some guests on the set. You need some puppies, as we've had the past few years. You need some stump the truck. You get a little loopy there in round six, round seven, having worked on that, you know, the TV set for all those hours. But I definitely love the draft more personally because I'm on the set as opposed to the combine. I'm in the trucks. Combine, it's a long, dark week in the truck in there. So I just like being on the set. And you remember 2 years ago, we're on the Bellagio fountain. You know, it's just a little bit nicer out there, a little more air. You get to see the people and the fans. So I absolutely love the draft, and it's a pleasure to be right there offset, as you guys saw.
And now we again transition on to Green Bay in 2025. Should be a blast. Can't wait to see you in town. Let's jump into this Packers draft, though, because there's a lot to discuss. It's interesting. I went back and I listened to our episode prior to the draft, and one of the things that you mentioned, quote, versatility is value. And the Packers listened to you, Ben Fennell, because they went very versatile heavy throughout the course of the draft. It was something they obviously valued a ton. Players that can play different positions, have different roles on the team, special teams value all of it. Jump into any of that you want, but I also just kind of want to hear your general thoughts on how the Packers navigated this draft as a whole.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job. You know, a bunch of trade backs there on day two, day three, acquiring some extra picks, I believe, if the count ended up right with that trade at New Orleans. But getting the tackle in the first round seemed like a main objective to at least add some competition, some young depth, some kids with some upside to compete with Rashid Walker and the guys they already have there. We'll figure out where guys land as far as Zach Tom and the shuffling the O-line. And then it seemed like a pretty deliberate address of the down the pipe of the defense, which a new defensive coordinator, I'm sure he has some new views and philosophies on who he wants. And they were not shy about adding some new bodies, particularly linebacker, safety, hybrid, you know, nickel safety as well. Like you were saying, guys, I can do multiple things. And I think this Packers team had an objective and they checked those boxes. So I like that they had a intent goal. And don't forget, Andy, we have a lot of exciting sophomores out there.
Yeah.
So this isn't necessarily the team that needs to influx itself with all this youth and rookies out there. You have some sophomores that earn playing time, that are potential superstars, stars in this league, and you want to see them in year two grow. So I don't think this draft was necessarily about reloading or retooling the roster, just finding those right spots to compete, maybe add some high-level players, get younger at spots, and add some competition. I think the Packers did a great job.
Yeah, we talked about some of the, you know, similarities between last year and this year with the Packers draft, but the difference, the key difference for me is last year the Packers had a roster that needed a little bit of everything. You know, Goody had everything at his disposal. He could have gone pretty much any position that he wanted to, and he'd be like, yep, that room needed some work. This year, to your point, with the intentionality of sort of going some of those positions that you did see holes with, the safety position, they triple up on the linebacker position, they get two in the top 100. They go running back, which was clearly a need, three offensive linemen, which they needed depth for. I sort of went into the draft thinking like there's seven or eight spots that you could clearly see them going specifically based off of the needs that they absolutely have. And that's exactly what they did. So it definitely seemed like they were intentional about it. And it definitely felt like they filled those holes and made it so that there weren't those huge issues going into, if like you mentioned prior to the draft, if you had to play a game this Sunday, they seem a lot more ready now.
Yeah. And I think when you get a new defensive coordinator with a new philosophy, it's that nucleus. So it's those linebackers, those safeties that are probably the forefront players to change and to try to be embodiments of what that new scheme needs. And I think this Packers team is going to look very different down the middle. And I think a lot of Packers fans welcome that, not only from scheme, but personnel and hopefully execution on the field.
Ben, you spend so much time breaking down the tape and analyzing these players. You do it as well, if not better, than just about everyone. Let's start with Jordan Morgan. I know everyone wants to kind of hear your thoughts on Morgan, and then we'll kind of go, you know, round by round through some of these picks. But what is Jordan Morgan good at? What does he struggle with? And what is he going to bring to the Packers?
Well, first and foremost, he is a prototype NFL left tackle, height, weight, speed, size. I mean, 6'5", 320 with quick feet. He is the part of left tackle. Now, he has some technique flaws and he has some length issues that kind of get heightened because of those technique flaws. Yes, he does have a shorter profile with arm length, but I think that gets exacerbated with his occasionally late and wide hands, which if you have 36-inch arms and you play with wide hands, it's going to hurt you too. So I think technique matters so much more with tackles than arm length. So I have some issues with his technique, but he has great quick feet, can really absorb power rushes with that size, has really good awareness against blitzers, stunts, really good in space with his angles, getting to the second level, the screen game, kicking out corners and those pin pulls. I think he could do a lot of things for an offense. He just needs to clean up some technique aspects, like a lot of kids do, particularly in the trenches, coming from Saturdays to Sundays. And you hope the pro coaching will take him over the edge there. And I think the exciting thing with Jordan Morgan being a three-year starter, he got better each season with an ACL tear in there in 2022. So if you're going to keep betting on the come up and keep betting on that he's going to keep rising, that's a great value pick there at the end of the first round. I think the Packers wanted a tackle. That was the hopper of player available to him at that tier in the draft. And if you didn't go get a Jordan Morgan there, it's going to be a severe drop off after that. So I think getting one of these players was imperative for the Packers. Maybe wasn't the flavor or the guy certain fans wanted or personally wanted, but that's what was available and how the draft played out. So I'm glad they added a body there. And now let's just bet on the development, bet on the come up, and hopefully it adds competition to the offensive line room and the best man, you know, emerges on week one.
Yeah, you mentioned two things that I wanted to point out. One is, as you mentioned, you continue to get better through all three seasons. The thing that stuck out most to me was coming off of that ACL. So many times we see guys coming off an ACL take a bit of a step back and you're wondering, all right, are they going to be better the year after that? Because it just takes them time to kind of get back to themselves. And the fact that he was ready to go right away to start last season and played as well as he did right out of the gate, coming off the ACL, like I can only imagine if he didn't have that ACL injury, what last season potentially could have looked like if he never had that setback. And now if he takes a jump after this, you know, in his second year removed from it, that's a really fun thought to think about. And then the other thing that you mentioned is the technique stuff outside of the little bit of the shorter arm sort of thing. Everything else that you want in a tackle, he has, as you mentioned, but the things that he maybe needs cleaning up are all coachable and teachable things, which we're hoping that he can get to Green Bay and those coaches can kind of tweak everything else out that they need out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I thought he played well at the Senior Bowl, did some good things in one-on-ones, had some good reps against high-level rushers in the Pac-12 this past year. He looks the part against NFL talent. Now it's just, can the NFL coaching really refine, you know, those traits and the technique and get the best out of them? He has the tools, he has the traits, he has the ability, like a lot of these kids do in the first round. Now it's, how coachable are you? How much can you be that immediate professional? How much do you love the game? How much are you willing to work at it? And I think that's the enigma that the draft is, that each of these guys are unique individuals. They each bring their own kind of luggage with them. And hopefully Jordan Morgan's one of the guys we could check the box and look back and laugh that we got him late first round.
That's the hope, and that's the exciting aspect, if he can reach that ceiling. Let's jump to round two. Jeff Hafley gets a couple of big-time, fast attacking players at the second level. Obviously, Edgerrin Cooper at linebacker, and then they get Javon Bullard in the second-round pick that they had. Your thoughts on both of those players?
Well, exciting players to add down the middle and the nucleus of the defense, and I was welcoming a change or added competition, added youth, and we'll start with the backside of that. I think Javon Bullard is very similar to a Darnell Savage.
Yep.
However, he is not as explosive as Savage, but he's a much better football player. He's tougher, more instinctive, better FBI, better technique, better tackling, better coverage savvy. But Savage had the 4.3 speed and jumped 40 inches and all those exciting traits and upside, but he never materialized that onto the field. Javon Bullard, I think, is a much more NFL-ready nickel safety player to play day one. I think Packers fans are going to see that and feel that day one. You see it on his Georgia tape for the last 3 years, physical, high-energy player, variety of spots, whether he's playing half field on the back end, some center field, down in the box, covering the slot, played a lot of different roles there for Kirby Smart's defense, which is an NFL-style defense. There's a lot of NFL techniques and principles that should suit him well, going from Saturdays to Sundays, and I'm really excited to see him hold down that nickel spot, maybe that safety spot, and just be a interchangeable, versatile playmaking player for Jeff Hafley's defense. I don't think we need to find a, say, he's the nickel, you know, for 600 snaps in 2024. He's going to play a lot. He's going to play a variety of roles, and I'm excited for it, and I think it's an upgrade with what they had.
Yeah. So with, you mentioned at the end, it doesn't necessarily matter where he plays. And we know that they're going to use him in a versatile, in a variety of different ways, with playing him a little bit in the slot, a little bit at post safety, a little bit in the box, everything like that. One of the questions I have seen from people is, do you believe that if they wanted to use him as a primary nickel, does he have the coverage ability and everything that he needs to succeed in the NFL being just a primary nickel?
I think so. You know, and he may not be that 4.3 player. He may not be 6'2 and super long and rangy, but he's a well-rounded football player, which to be in that nickel spot, whether you're Teron Johnson's or Kenny Moore's or those guys, you have to be tough. You have to be versatile. You have to be able to cover, but you better be able to blitz and run support and tackle and be instinctive. Those nickels, those linebackers, those are victims A and B on the opponent's offensive coordinators each week on how do we attack them. It is a brutal spot in today's NFL with misdirection and RPOs and things like that, that it's a really tough spot to play. I'm really excited for Javon Bullard to hold that down if he wants to, but I think he can play a variety of spots on the defense. So whether it's a combination of Keyshawn Nixon or maybe some of the later guys they got in the draft, I think he's going to play a lot. I just don't know if we need to say he's going to be this spot or that spot or this position. He's probably going to be out there in the nickel slot quite a bit. I don't know if he's going to be the full-time nickel, though, so we'll see.
Hey, friends. You may not know this because usually you hear me talking about the Packers 365 days a year, but I'm actually a massive, massive fan of the NBA playoffs. And while I've always enjoyed NBA basketball, it's been taken to an entirely different level as I've been utilizing Prize Picks to test my skills and add to that excitement level of the NBA playoffs. Prize Picks is the most fun that I have ever had, winning up to 100 times my money, and there's never been a better time to join the Prize Picks community. Did you know that there's over 5 million members that have already downloaded the app? 5 million! This playoff season, star players are in play in a significant way. Keep an eye out for starred players on the board, and you could receive a 10% payout boost if they're in your winning lineup. This week, I'm going with Brooke Lopez, Paul George, and Jalen Brunson for rebounds, points, and assists, respectively. And I'm already geeking out about putting Caitlin Clark's three-pointers made stat line in my lineup when women's season tips off in just over a month. Basketball plus Prize Picks equals epic excitement. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. There is nothing quite like the thrill of live NBA playoff basketball this time of year. And if you haven't had the opportunity to catch a playoff game in person, let me just tell you, you are missing out. But you don't need to be. You could attend an NBA playoff game easily with the use of Game Time. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and easier. And guess what? Prices actually go down the closer that you get to tip off. With killer last minute deals, all-in prices, seat views, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes all the awful, frustrating aspects of purchasing tickets out of the equation, and they help you get the perfect tickets that you want. I'm on my Game Time app right now, scrolling through Bucks tickets for Game 5, and not only are there plenty of great seats available, but the deals are incredible, and I can literally click and purchase any number of amazing deals right now. The best thing about Game Time is definitely the ease of use, no question about it, but their lowest price guarantee and their cancellation protection have come in huge for me in the past and are two more of my favorite features. Let me just say it again. The last minute deals come in clutch every single time. You can save up to 60% by buying last minute tickets for sports, concerts, comedy shows, and so much more. So get in on the action and take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, PACKADAY, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think just giving Hafley those options of how he wants to use them. One of the things I was most impressed by with Hafley in his press conference was just basically saying, we're going to use guys to the best of their abilities, but we're also going to try to counter what the other team has and what we need to do to stop the other team. This is going to be very similar to what I think Matt LaFleur does on offense to attack mismatches and figure out what his offense needs to do to attack the opposing defense. With Joe Barry, it felt like we're going to play our style, our brand of defense. There'll be a couple tweaks in there here or there, but this feels like with Hafley, they're going to attack the opposing offense with what they need to do to stop that particular offense. And some days that might be Jair in the slot. Some days that might be Nixon in the slot. Some days that might be Bullard. And I just think having all of those different flavors and options is what's really going to make this, hopefully make this defense go.
You almost have to, because the variety of players in the slot and the way they're attacking defenses is so different week to week. You might have a 6'6 tight end one week, then it's Deebo Samuel in the slot the next week, then it's Jahmyr Gibbs, then it's Justin Jefferson, but you're going to keep the same nickel player in there, you know, for 700, 800 snaps. He's just going to feast or famine based on the matchup. You have to be able to match up, you know, tit for tat based on who the offense is throwing at you. And there is no bigger variety than that slot interior spot with your opponent. So I love the versatility mindset of going in with that nickel spot and the defensive back room.
Could not agree more. I think the nickel spot's the hardest spot, as you mentioned. And I can't even imagine the variety of different players you could see in a week to week, not to mention having to stop the run against tight ends, fullbacks, use checks, Kittles. Pulling tackles. It's just a nightmare.
I think it's crazy when rookies are in there too. Like Bryce Branch played a considerable last year.
Yep.
Christian Izian, kid from Rutgers, played for Tampa Bay as an undrafted in the slot quite a bit. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. It's like I-Z-I-E-N.
Yeah, I don't know either. You're
right. But Izian, anyways.
I know who you mean. Let's talk a little bit about Edge Cooper. What is he going to be able to do next to Quay for this defense?
Well, he's a very similar player to Quay. Very explosive, see ball, get ball, linebacker. He's high cut with the skinny lower half. He's really exciting. There's QB spy, the blitz, the run sideline to sideline. He's going to make a ton of tackles. Played almost 600 special team snaps down there for Texas A&M. And he's a really exciting playmaking linebacker. He's going to be able to shoot gaps and make a lot of plays in the alley. Now, he does, you know, take some cheese at times. He gets caught up in misdirection at times, a little undisciplined at times, trying to shoot backdoor gaps and make too many plays. But that's okay. It's typically what you get from a team like Texas A&M with high-level players that's a little underachieving. You get guys trying to do too much out there. So I think a guy like Edgerrin Cooper has a lot of traits, a lot of ability. Just need to settle him down a little bit with his instincts, his FBI, his reads, things like that. But he brings an explosive, high-energy presence, just like Javon Bullard from the SEC, that's seen a lot of NFL-level talent. He's seen a lot of NFL running backs, tight ends, offensive linemen, blocking schemes that should suit him well. Now, where he's going to play on Sundays, I think that's a really big question, whether he's a true Mike linebacker, whether he's a Will linebacker, whether he's a Sam linebacker. Maybe he's a rush end on third down. I think what he's going to do at the next level is really up in the air right now. I think he's a run and chase Will linebacker, which means I would want more of a CEO type of linebacker at Mike, calling the defense, being more of that nail, and then he can be the guy that, or excuse me, being that hammer, and then he could come and kind of make a lot of those plays as a lot of those linebacking pairs are that 1-2. So he has a little bit of a skinny lower half, doesn't take on particularly well, loves to split blocks with his, you know, his athleticism and his quickness and agility. So maybe that Mike linebacker could be somebody a little bit more, you know, 6'1", 230, you know, much better built in the lower half to kind of do those take-on roles, and then let, you know, Edgerrin or Quay or some combination of the two make all those plays and those tackles and have all that range that we know they have.
I would love that. I don't know that they necessarily have that flavor of linebacker on the roster currently, but Goody's been pretty adamant that they're going to be playing a ton of nickel. They don't see it any longer as a Mike, Will, and a Sam. They want two linebackers that can do a little bit of everything. And I guess to that definition, they kind of have that with Quay and Cooper. It's funny you bring up sort of how he plays the game. One of the things I had in my notes pre-draft is he'll kind of do his own thing sometimes and kind of just, you know, kind of do a little hero ball and kind of want to go make a play, which is a negative. But I also put under that, like, but a lot of times it works. Like, he also right. just like finds ways to make the play, even when he kind of goes off script a little bit, a little like Caleb Williams on the opposite side of like, yeah, I might do my own thing, but I'm going to also make it work. But we'll see how that works in the NFL.
Yeah, that's always a risk reward on Saturday, especially with high level players playing against guys that probably aren't pros. You can get away with that. And it's exciting. And it's just a matter of how do you evaluate that? You know, if he backdoors a gap and makes the play, is that a plus or a minus? And I love that evaluation. It's in the eye of the beholder of, yeah, you get away with it on Saturday, you made the play, but down the road, that's an undisciplined play there. You should do your job, and that may eventually come back to bite you. But it's nice to know he can show those high-level traits to go make those plays when he sees it. And believe me, not every playmaking linebacker is incredibly disciplined on Sundays. You got to take some chances here and there. When you see it, you hit it, you go, you trust yourself. And he did. And, you know, on a team like A&M that needed some help and needed some playmaking, he was kind of 1A to make those plays. So, you know, risk reward.
Let's jump forward to the third round. They come back and get Marshawn Lloyd, the running back out of USC, and then finalize their day two with Tyron Hopper, the linebacker. Thoughts on those two picks?
Yeah, really exciting addition in Lloyd, you know, potentially the best running back in the class, maybe mixed in there with, you know, Jonathan Brooks or Blake Corum, depending on how you viewed it. But he's really loose, explosive, creative in the open field, catches the ball well. I think he runs some gap schemes that he's shown with some really good patience and explosiveness. He's run some zone schemes too, where you kind of read things out, put his foot in the ground and read off linebackers and safeties, you know, filling the line of scrimmage. I think he's a playmaking running back. Maybe not a guy you want in short yardage, you know, not that physical bruising type. I don't think he's going to, you know, knock linebackers' heads off in pass protection. I want someone to guard this guy on third down, make him, you know, be a threat to the other side, not the other way around. So very much like a Aaron Jones style running back that I think he's really well-rounded, and you want to put the ball in his hands in a variety of ways. So I'm excited for this new era of pony package we'll probably see with Josh Jacobs and Marshawn Lloyd. Particularly in the pass game, as we've seen Matt LaFleur completely turn this Green Bay offense on its head with it, you know, involving the running backs in the pass game, you know, considering where we were with McCarthy. So I'm really excited for this new backfield in Green Bay. And I think Marshawn Lloyd may be one of the steals of the draft looking back on it.
Yeah, I think the two things, the fumbling and the pass pro, if he can get those two things good, he's going to see a lot of the field. And then all of those explosive traits are just going to take out over 7 yards per carry a season ago, as the playmaking ability and just the change when Jones was out last year of not having that secondary playmaking back, and the offense just never quite looked the same. Having somebody that can do those things when Josh Jacobs is off the field or if he gets hurt for some reason, I think is going to be super valuable to this offense. And then they get Tyron Hopper in the third round to round things out. Interesting pick here. I know a lot of people thought this was maybe a little bit of a reach, probably going to be a core special teamer to start, maybe compete with Isaiah McDuffie for that number three linebacker spot. But what'd you see on tape?
Yeah, and one last thing with Lloyd and the fumbles. Yeah. When you go back and watch them, he isn't a guy that finishes runs with his pad level and, you know, lower half, but he finishes runs with fighting you. And a lot of times he likes to use that off arm at the end of runs to kind of stiff arm guys and try to get more leverage for extra yards as opposed to bracing and finishing. So leaving that arm at contact points, only a one arm, I think a lot of balls came out late because of that. So I think that's just a technique flaw and something that he'll get better at finishing runs, knowing when that play is over, which we had talked about with Edrin Cooper doing too much. Sometimes he was doing too much as a ball carrier. And when you are an exciting playmaker and can make guys miss, you think you can make everybody miss and the run is never over. So I think I would rather those guys that are trying to do too much and let's gear them down as opposed to the guy that's tentative and we need to gear him up. This is a big philosophy in scouting on whether you want the timid guy and ramp him up or the over-aggressive guy and ramp him down. I think it's always easier to kind of wind down the over-aggressive guy. So I think Marshawn Lloyd will know, you know, when to pick those battles and finish runs and stay efficient. But Tyrone Hopper, he may be that Mike linebacker we look at in the future, you know, to be that green dot signal caller, the guy that can maybe do some more take on roles. We'll see. But he is a bit undersized linebacker, doesn't have elite speed, doesn't have elite length, but he is a tackling machine with really good instincts. He's a see ball, get ball guy that seems like he's always a step ahead of the running schemes, which he has to be. And I thought he was a really smart player out there, not only for Missouri, but that last half year for Florida before he transferred as well. So nice to see him in two different schemes out there. He's a guy that can lateral scrape really smooth, run sideline to sideline, and make a lot of tackles and get ball carriers on the ground, which I know that sounds boring, but that's what linebackers are out there to do. So I think he has some issues. Another guy with some technique flaws, a bit of an arm tackler out there. You know, he's a bit of a drag down tackler as opposed to snapping his hips through a ball carrier. You want to see two different tackling techniques. Watch Edrin Cooper, watch Tyrone Hopper. You know, Edrin Cooper's a guy that's going to snap his hips through the ball carrier, and you see it and you feel it the way those ball carriers go backwards. Tyrone Hopper is more of a drag down guy, more of an arm wrangler. So different guys have different ways of getting those ball carriers down. And, you know, I think it's exciting just to add some new bodies to that linebacker room out there. I think they had Isaiah McDuffie and not a whole lot else, you know, next to him, McQuay Walker there. So I think adding Hopper and Edrin Cooper are a welcome upgrade to that room.
Yeah, Eric Wilson, primary special teams guy around age 30, journeyman in his career. Christian Welch, primary special teams guy. Christian Young, a former safety, moved to linebacker. That was it. So getting a couple of guys like this in the first 2 days of the draft was super important for Green Bay. All right, Evan Williams, fourth round. They move up aggressively to get him. Some interesting safeties that were still on the board at that time, but they go and get one of the Senior Bowl standouts. I think he won Senior Bowl Player of the Week. I think Bullard was on the opposite side from the other team for both of them winning on defense. So your thoughts on Evan Williams?
Yeah, Senior Bowl in general had a great draft. Good job, Jim Nagy down there. I think he had over 100 guys drafted, nearly every Senior Bowl participant. But Evan Williams is actually on my radar after being like a three-year starter at Fresno State, transferred over to Oregon this past year. Really versatile player, tough player, good size at safety, can really run over running backs for sacks as a blitzer, but he can cover the slot, tackles well, sounding the sideline in the alley, good pursuit speed. That Senior Bowl week, I think he had the interception on the back end of a broken play as well. So he showed some range and some ball skills. He's a name that just kind of got caught in the wash of the safety class that wasn't particularly inspiring to begin with, outside, you know, Bullard and Tyler Newbin and some of those upper guys. But Evan Williams is right in that tier two of safeties that I was kind of looking around, why aren't more people talking about him? So I just don't think he had that eye-popping trait to hang your hat on. He wasn't 215. He's not 6'3". He doesn't run 4'4". He doesn't jump out the gym. He's just a really good, experienced football player. So they're sitting there on early day three. Take those types all day long. Going to play special teams, can play a variety of spots for you, and has a lot of film on Saturday to make sure you know what you're getting out there. So I'm really excited for the Evan Williams addition.
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting one. And I think Rich Bisacci has got to be pretty pleased with a handful of these guys and what they're going to be able to bring to the special team. Like you mentioned earlier, even Edrin Cooper, you usually get a guy that early in the draft and that specializes at a position. You're usually not looking at him playing a ton of special team snaps like he did, but they're going to have a lot of options with how they want to utilize these guys on teams as well. We get to the fifth round. They get Jacob Monk, the offensive lineman out of Duke, and then Ketan Oladapo, the safety out of Oregon State. Thoughts on these two picks?
Yeah, Monk is very similar to, you know, Evan Williams in that structure of a guy that's, you know, started for 4.5 years, 58 starts, 3,600 snaps played, versatile offensive lineman. Pretty sure he's played three different spots there on that offensive line, just without any high-end redeeming traits or quality. outside of just a really experienced, solid football player that's ready to join an NFL roster and compete. These are the guys you take flyers on day three all day long. This isn't a 20-year-old redshirt sophomore that you're betting on the traits and the come up, and you have to hope the maturity kind of checks that box and he's ready to be a pro. No, these guys are adults already. These guys are grown men. They're ready to compete, and I'm really excited to add these types of competition to the offensive line room. I think the Packers should, you know, like every team, go after these types every day three. And it's one of my core philosophies of always take a day three quarterback, always take a day three versatile lineman, always take a day three versatile defensive back with experience. So I like what the Packers do here on day three. It seems like this is their bread and butter. And I know fans are saying, oh, but, you know, Royce Newman didn't work out and he didn't work out and he didn't work out. Many of them did work out, though, too. And these are just lottery tickets. They're flyers. They're not all going to work out. But you got to keep playing that lottery. So I like the Packers keep going to the well for these types, and we'll see who comes up at the end of camp.
J.C. Treader did work out. Corey Linsley did work out. Zach Tom did work out. Mark Tauscher, T.J. Lang, Josh Sitton. There's been a variety of players that have worked out for this sort of philosophy for Green Bay. Hopefully he can be the next. And then Ketan Oladapo, safety.
Yeah, really excited for him. This is a massive, leggy, strong safety box player. Can probably play some sub linebacker for the unit if he needs to. He can mirror tight ends, physical tackler, can play that top-down role in quarters. His arms really disrupt catch points. I wrote in here, he punches so hard at the catch point. Really good length there in the seams and to play the ball down the field. Bunch of red zone PBUs in 2023. I think he had four or five against pretty much every high-end quarterback, too. I saw one against Caleb Williams, one against Bo Nix as well. So he's a guy I'm really excited to add into that room as well. Definitely takes on a different kind of size, tone, you know, personality than the other defensive backs. He's different than Keyshawn Nixon, different than Bullard. You know, he's a little bit different than Evan Williams. This guy might end up being 220 pounds by the end of camp. So he's going to take on a much different style as far as everybody else. You know, he's going to play special teams out there. And let's just see where this team views him. He could be that Joe Thomas dime linebacker type, you know, that we remember from years back. So I think he's a ball of clay right now, but he's been a really exciting football player. And another one just in that next tier of safety that you really didn't know where to peg him. You didn't know if he was a late round three player, if you know he's early round six player. And I think safety, running back, tight end, it was really hard to forecast and project where these guys were going to go in the draft. Even the Marshawn Lloyd. It's like you're about to send that card in and you look around the room like, are we too early on this? Are we too late? Like, when are running backs about to go? You almost want to just quickly forecast the league. And you're like, okay, I guess that's good value there in the third or Marshawn Lloyd. Same with Oladapo. It's just like, are we early on him? Did everyone miss this guy? Like, why is he still sitting here? But I just think some of those positions that are taking on different structural value in the draft are very, very tough to project. But you could get some good values like Marshawn Lloyd, like a Ketan sitting here, and what do you get him in round five, round six? Yep.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, so Green Bay's had some experience taking some of these bigger safeties and moving them inside. Josh Jones, they tried it with as a second-round pick. I think it maybe worked a little bit better moving him to sort of that linebacker role, except Jones never wanted to do it and never really took to it. So that sort of kind of got dead on arrival there. Raven Green, they moved into that box safety role, and that actually worked for a bit, but then he had a bunch of injuries and just couldn't stay healthy. Tariq Carpenter, they also wanted to move in that linebacker role. He also didn't seem to really want to do it. They ended up having to release him. him. He goes to Pittsburgh, and what do? They put him at linebacker. So they definitely have had some experience here, and we'll see what happens with Oladapo. If they keep him at safety, they have that conversation of maybe being that dime linebacker. Either way, it should give them versatility and should give them another core special teams guy. We can go lightning round here at the end if you want, or you can take as much time as you want, whatever you'd like to do, Ben. But we've got three picks left. Travis Glover, the offensive tackle, Michael Pratt, the quarterback, and Kalen King, the corner, who at this point last year was at a totally different tier, at least thought about, but go in any direction that you'd like.
Yeah, Kitan reminds me a lot of Jaron Kearse, who spent some time with the Vikings and the Dallas Cowboys, coming out of Clemson, I believe.
Great comp.
Big, big box safety to come down and really knock your head off. Can't do a whole lot going backwards, but we'll see. Travis Glover, guy, really good size, NFL prototype tackle size. Just a mess with traits, or a mess with technique and execution. He's just a guy I think you're going to bet on, you know, the coaching at the NFL level, and hope he can add some competition there, you know, as a day three pick. Packers typically like adding these guys into the fire, whether it's, you know, there's a Virginia Tech kid, the Yash Nijmans, yeah, and the Kadeem, yeah, Telforts and those types of guys. Hopefully you can slide him to the practice squad and keep working on him down the road. Michael Pratt, this is what you do in round six and round seven. You take a four-year starter with NFL QB size and arm strength, just like they did with Sean Clifford last year. Maybe not the NFL arm as much, but a guy with a ton of experience in the Big Ten, Sean Clifford, guy with NFL size, just looks prototyped to be an NFL backup. I think you should take one of these types every year from that Ron Wolf school of thinking, that you should always kind of take a flyer on one of these late quarterbacks. And Pratt throws a really beautiful deep ball. He can play the position from the pocket. His accuracy is just a little bit up and down to be desired. He'll thread one in through the seam and then miss like a swing pass on you. So, but he's 6'3", 220 with a live arm and a four-year starter. Those are traits and boxes you like checking there as a round seven quarterback. And Kalen King, I think he's been one of the hot button, you know, prospects picks of the Packers here coming in round seven, a guy that I was highly touted on, you know, coming into the 2023 season, did not have the season as expected. And it wasn't just me. If you look at Max Chadwick, who does a lot of recruiting stuff, PFF stuff, he had him 15th overall in his too early mock last year. So right after the draft, a lot of people tried to throw some, you know, names on the wall for an early mock. He had him 15th overall, and that's how he was trending. If he had a good season and locked up Marvin Harrison Jr. and ran 4.54 or something like that, he's probably a round two type of player, or maybe a back end of round one. But he didn't have a great season, didn't test well, and an up and down Senior Bowl week. And this is where you find yourself on day three here. But his 2022 tape was really exciting. And there's been some other guys in this mold, in that height, weight, lacking speed kind of department, like a Logan Ryan, like a Casey Hayward, that played a lot of ball in the NFL and played a lot of corner, played a lot of nickel, played some hybrid roles as well. So I think Kalen King can do that for you. And I think it's an absolute steal sitting here in round seven.
And we were about to find out with the Kalen King too, of like, how does he respond to this? And it seemed in his post draft interview that he was fired up about this, that he's going to prove everyone wrong, that he should have never been a seventh round pick. Sometimes that's exactly what guys that were having that hype going into a season and it didn't go according to plan. Sometimes that wake up call is all they need. And if they get the Kalen King from a year ago, that again was projected, you know, projected to maybe go the top two rounds of the draft, what an absolute steal that would be here at the end of round seven. And I love those comps too. Like Logan Ryan was a corner slot safety guy. He moved all over the place. And obviously Casey Hayward went on to have a tremendous career in the NFL for a variety of different teams. Chargers, I think he had a little bit of run with the Falcons, obviously after the Packers as well. But if he could turn into either of those guys, that would be a massive steal for Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, two guys without exceptional size, length. They ran in the mid 4.5s. They just had kind of ho-hum NFL profiles. Really good, smart, instinctual football players, though. So I think sometimes you get a little bit hung up on, you know, the height, weight, speed scouting as opposed to just watch them. And, you know, Casey Hayward had an up and down career in college, too. I remember him getting torched on occasion where you play Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Yeah, out there in the SEC. And you play some gauntlet receivers out there. So you're going to have your lumps, just like in the Big Ten. Kalen King, he had to face some really tough receivers. I mean, you see those Ohio State kids, the Michigan kids out there, some high-level players you have to go against. He'll be better for it.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison beating you isn't exactly the you know, end of the world. He's going to beat a lot of people that he's across, right, for the remainder of his career sometimes. But we'll see what he can do in Green Bay. With all of those breakdowns being said, just kind of your overall assessment of this entire draft for Green Bay.
Well, I think they, you know, check the boxes that they wanted to. I think they want to fix the down the pipe of the defense, linebacker, safety, and not just fix, but add new bodies, new life in there. It's going to be a new philosophy, new scheme. So now you have to start adding some of the bodies you prefer from a Jeff Hafley perspective. I like the offensive line address, particularly at left tackle, as they had a seventh round Rasheed Walker holding it down for most of the last season. Yash Nijman holding it down the year before. I think they just want to add a higher level player into the mix there, as opposed to maybe taking a flyer in free agency. So I like adding some youth in there. They haven't gone to the offensive line well in the first round in quite some time since the Derek Sherrod, Brian Bulaga years, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep,
but
are.
Remember, Packers fans, they are ahead of the curve on development. They had to thrust a lot of young guys in the lineup last year, and now they are ahead of that kind of learning curve, that developmental curve. So I don't think this was a draft. They were necessarily looking to retool the entire roster and find all these rookies that need to play meaningful snaps. There are some exciting sophomores in that locker room that have earned playing time and are really excited to be on that field, and I think are just scratching the surface with what they can do. So I think what you got last year was maybe taking some of those toys out of the package a little bit before they were ready. Now they're better for it, and now they're heading into year two ahead of that kind of timeline as far as where young players should develop, and I think they have some exciting talent that they are excited to get back on the field. So this wasn't a draft. They had a lot of needs because of what happened last season, so I think this Packers team is in great shape.
They're excited to get back on the field. I'm excited to watch them. I wait to see what they're going to be in 2024 and 2025. A couple quick ones before we get you out of here really quick. Anything that surprised you about this draft? Anything that you loved? Anything you didn't like? Not about the Packers, but just the draft in general. Anything that just stood out to you in any direction you want to go?
You know, outside of just the unique results of the quarterbacks being thrust up, I'm glad offensive line eventually, you know, put their stamp on this draft and all those guys end up going in the first round and pushed up there. Trades galore on day two and early day three. And I think that's going to be the trend for another year or two as the draft pool isn't as deep. I think it's really important for some of these teams to go up and get the guys they want in those middle rounds because there is such a round six, round seven priority free agent drop-off. And I thought what Howie Roseman said yesterday was really reflective in that, you know, they only signed seven undrafted free agents. They went to the well, the practice squads, you know, a few months ago. So they were picking guys off other teams' practice squads that are more experienced, have tape out there in the NFL because this player pool isn't as deep because of that COVID year, because of NIL, because of a bunch of other reasons that guys are staying back in college a little bit more than they had. That means the prospect pool isn't as deep, which changes some thinking and some philosophy. So I like the Packers continue to move around the board, add some late capital, but they also went up and got guys they felt passionate about. So I think I really like the aggressiveness. And if you feel like, you know, Jake Monk is a good value sitting there in round five, they traded up, you know, a couple picks to go get him. And I think there was a couple other guys he traded up. I'm blanking on which ones.
Evan Williams.
Yeah, Evan Williams is another one. So I like that cat and mouse of trying to acquire more picks and then seeing that good value when you see it and going to get that guy. So I think they did a great job here in Green Bay. But collectively, the draft, the movement in these GMs and finding value inside the draft, getting players that you want, and also adding some future capital is kind of the name of the game. And I think the best GMs out there, the Howie Rosemans, the Brian Gutekunst, I thought did a great job this past weekend.
Yeah, I thought so too. Last but not least, what should we know about the 2025 draft? What are we looking forward to? What's strong? What's weak? Anything that you already know about it?
Well, typically these things ebb and flow. The quarterback group next year doesn't look as exciting on paper right now, but there were a lot of veterans. I mean, we just put 25-year-old Michael Penix and Bo Nix into the NFL. Caleb Williams is around college football. We're going to have some new guys in college football this season. There's going to be some redshirt freshmen and sophomore that are getting the keys to the car. Some are going to fall on their face. Some are going to be new household names in December and October. So I don't have a lot of names for you right now. I could run some off, but just going to be a little bit of a new landscape in the quarterback. Obviously, Carson Beck at Georgia, Quinn Ewers at Texas, Shedeur Sanders will be the headliner names, but we're going to learn some new guys. The receiver group, exciting, versatile, explosive once again. Luther Burden III at Missouri, really exciting receiver. He looks like he's a combination of like Odell Beckham and Malik Nabers this past year. Speed all over that receiver group. Fun edge rushers all over college football. They got bendy, loose guys like James Pierce at Tennessee, and then stout, run-through-your-face guys like the JT Tuilomotalo kid from Ohio State, Ashton Gillup from Louisville, Nick Scowerton went from Purdue to Texas A&M. He's got the spin cycles. So it's an exciting group there, and corner is really exciting as well. This past year wasn't that deep of a class at the top. I know Quinion and Terrien were kind of the headliners, but there's a lot of really exciting players that are finally draft eligible, like Benjamin Morrison at Notre Dame, Will Johnson at Michigan is kind of the headliner. Really exciting class. So I think every position has someone to get excited about. This tight end class should be a flow year after an ebb year last year. Ebb, flow, ebb. I'm not sure which one's up, which one's down, but it was kind of a down tight end last year. Should bounce back up next year as a lot of those guys went back to school. A lot of Buckeyes went back to school as well. So that's kind of the general profile. Good tackle class. Once again, LSU might have the best tackle pair in the country in Will Campbell and Emory Jones on the other side. They forced a high-level kid to transfer to Tennessee, I'm pretty sure. So the transfer portal, the movement in college football, it's tough to keep up. My 2025 sheet is a mess right now, but we have all spring and summer to get those squared away. Phil Steele, put your catalog out so I can get caught up, please. And we're going to hit the ground running here pretty soon on 2025.
Ben, you are absolutely amazing. You are free. Go enjoy the rest of the summer.
It's too open-ended, Andy. You can't just ask me about a whole draft class, all right?
Hey, I'll give you as much time as you want to talk about the next year's.
I'm done.
No, you're the best. I appreciate it a ton. And thank you so much for taking the time both before and after the draft. My favorite conversation every time this year. And every time you want to come on, it's always a joy and pleasure talking to you. Tell everyone where we can find your work and where you're going to be golfing this summer.
You can always find me on Twitter at @BenFennell_NFL. The service is a little shoddy on the course, so I may not be tweeting and posting here over the next few weeks. Take a little bit of a break as work hard, play hard is still a philosophy in my life. So time to go play out there. I'm going to be playing up in the Poconos quite a bit, Pocono Farms Country Club. Anybody's around for some reason out there in Northeast Pennsylvania, give me a call. Also living down here in Philadelphia. So if anyone's in the area, I'm off all summer. You want to golf, you want to garden, you want to watch some film, you want to hang out, give me a ring, shoot me a DM. And I'm definitely in play mode here, Andy.
I will enjoy the heck out of it. I can't wait to see you for the 2025 NFL draft. Maybe we'll see you for a Thursday night football game or something this upcoming season. Enjoy your summer. I'm sure we'll be in touch before you know it. Follow him on Twitter at @BenFennell_NFL. You can find me at @AndyHermanNFL. Of course, you can find the podcast at @PackadayPodcast. That's going to do it for Ben and I. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.